Tim, you essentially believe there was a shooting war. And you look at these headlines about all these crashes, and it's before, during, and after the Roswell thing. So essentially, you're saying Roswell was one incident of many.
Well, I don't know how many recoveries there were, George, but I certainly think there were some during the First World War, which I've mentioned before. In fact, I've mentioned in previous books, and I've added a few more. There was certainly one in that came down in New Mexico in August, in the late summer of 1945, which I've discussed briefly. Came down in a little town of San Antonito, near San Antonio, New Mexico. And this was taken away by the army. And there have been other instances, one in Ohio in 1944. Whether these were shot down or not, I do not know. But Roswell was not the first. But you're talking about the evidence. How can we prove this? Well, I think the proof is contained in many of the newspaper articles of that period, the contemporary news articles, from local papers to the New York Times. I mean, this was worldwide. There was a situation that pilots were reporting discs in the sky. There were accidents happening all the time around that period, many of them completely unexplained. And incidentally, later on, we might come to this, but the official U.S. Defense Department accident statistics, which I've got thanks to Richard Hall, Richard H. Hall, the great investigator, who was given them by Dr. Olavo Fontes. There were something like, off the top of my head, I can't remember exactly, but from 1952 to October of 1956, there were about 1,700 unexplained accidents involving interceptor aircraft, the type that would be used to intercept, chase UFOs, just from that period. So if we were to look at the records, the way to prove it would be to look at the military records of these many, many accidents, and I think it would be very, very interesting indeed if we can get all those.
Let's focus on Roswell for a couple of minutes. You write in your book, and from the outset, Roswell has also been the subject of an intensive counterintelligence campaign using every conceivable trick or tradecraft by fair means or foul, such as threatening and discrediting witnesses and fabricating counter evidence.
That's right.
That's pretty tough to cut through it, because these guys who do this stuff are good at it, aren't they?
Well, of course, it's their profession. You know, counterintelligence, for example, the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, AFOSI, has been involved for many, many years. And there are thousands of people involved in counterintelligence deception programs to put out false information and discrediting witnesses and so on. It still goes on, and it can be very, very effective indeed. Also, you have the media can be influenced by people in counterintelligence. It's called perception management. We call it news management over here. It's rather sort of devious method of doing things, but it is done. If spin is another word, just altering a few facts, discrediting witnesses. It's quite easy, and it's very, very effective.
You know what's amazing to me? You've dug up all these newspaper articles that have just never been mentioned in this context before, that sure seemed to paint a pattern right before Roswell that things were going on in the sky that could have been related to this crash. I mean, you know, one of the things you mention in the book is this discrepancy about when Mac Brazel actually reported finding the wreckage that we know today as the Roswell incident. Now, what's the significance of that?
Well, I don't know exactly, George, quite frankly, without going through all the you know, the facts and figures and everything. But what I do know is that in around the 26th, 27th, 28th of June, in New Mexico, a number of these discs were seen wobbling around the skies. They were described as sailing or falling objects. And, for example, there's the El Paso Times of 28th of June, which I've got in front of me here, and it talks about conjecture as to whether the falling objects had any relation to the mysterious flying discs which had been variously reported. And in fact, there were sent from White Sands in attempts to locate the objects or to secure additional information. And of course, they eventually got them. But maybe the rancher was the first to report one of the sites. I think probably that's what may have happened. There were several sites. There's still some doubt about the exact location of the sites. There might have, some people say there were two, some people say there were even three. There's still some confusion about that, but a lot more information is coming out now. And of course, we have Walter Hout, who apparently signed a sort of like what amounts to a deathbed confession that he himself, he was the press officer for the United States Army Air Forces at Roswell Army Airfield at the time. And, finally, after his death, we learned that he'd actually had a glimpse of the alien beings themselves recovered in one of these incidents. So, the truth is sort of gradually emerging. Over the years, more and more people are coming forward, and I've introduced several more witnesses, people like the Polish biophysicist, who together with a small team of scientists, of biophysicists from Britain, from France and Italy, and this was a Polish guy, were actually shown at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory back in April of 1977, the JPL at Pasadena. They were taken down to a vault three levels below ground and shown in this top secret area remains of some of the alien beings found in New Mexico. No specifics were given, but this biophysicist describes in great detail his opinion that this was not the skeletal structure that he examined was neither that of a chimpanzee nor a small child, but there was also a large part of the skull that were exhibited in this top secret room, and I find that testimony very, very compelling indeed.